If you are interested in stories with happy endings, you would be better off reading some other book. That is the first line of Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. The children's book told the story of three siblings who became orphans. Things got worse from there. Daniel Handler created Lemony Snicket and wrote the books, and he's out with a new book now called Goldfish Ghost. It's a kid's story about a dead goldfish. Daniel's wife, Lisa Brown, did the illustrations for the book. Daniel and Lisa, hello.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And it is. Yes, it is.
Daniel, first, what do you have against happy endings?
I think it's more interesting when terrible things happen. I think that if you take a walk around your neighborhood and you are bitten by a dog, but also you see a ladybug, that when you get home and someone says, "How was your walk?" you're more likely to mention the fact that you were bitten by a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So
it makes a better story.
Yeah, and it's just more interesting. I think I find trouble and death and gloom to be just inherently entertaining. That's always been my way.
Why entertaining?
I think that the threat of something dark happening engages you, the way a bite on your leg will engage you when you are on a walk, or the way if you're, say, walking down the hallway of a public radio station towards a room where you will tape an interview, mm-hmm. It's fun to think, I wonder if all of these vintage radios on display will fall off the shelves and cause anyone any harm, than it is to say, oh, look, old radios.
They stayed where they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lisa, do you think about happiness versus compelling misfortune in your illustration?
Yeah, I don't really think about happiness at all, I would have to say, in illustrations or in life.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, I'm Jewish. The expectation is that the worst will happen at any time.
It's a constant life of suffering.
Yeah. And I enjoy that.
You enjoy the expectation more than the actual suffering.
Oh, no, I don't. Yeah. The suffering rarely happens.
Right. Suffering by definition, I don't think you can enjoy. I think you have to suffer through it. But other people's suffering or the anticipation of suffering can often be entertaining. I'm sure this is true for all of our Seattle listeners who live in a place that's almost always gray and threatening downpour. And I think there's a kind of citywide attitude that goes with that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, we embrace the gloom.
There you go.
Yeah. Daniel, you've called childhood bewildering. What did you mean by that?
Gosh, did I only say that about childhood? I think that living life is bewildering. We're constantly told, particularly in childhood, that there's some kind of system in place that makes sense, a system of morality or expectation, and that, in fact, we are all of us lunatics wandering around with no idea what is going on or what's going to happen next, hoping that we can find perhaps people who will make us feel safe or a place where we can feel comforted, but for the most part, we are bewildered.
And you think kids don't buy the morality play or the pat ending?
Well, I don't think you have to be a child for very long or to travel very far to see that, for instance, behaving well does not necessarily mean you will be rewarded. You'll see kind of everyday injustice in the playground or around your dinner table, let alone out in the wider so-called adult world. So I think children are pretty wise to the false myths that are often thrust upon them.
Well, then why do so many of us want happy endings? Or don't we? I mean, I think of, for example, the Hollywood ending, right? That's the supposedly universally appealing way to tell a story.
Don't people like to cry at the end of a movie?
Well, they can cry from happiness.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
I think everyone's different. What they like is different. When we're asked, well, will children enjoy reading about death and arson and destruction? We usually say, well, some of them will. I was a kid who was always obsessed with dark and gloom and sort of the eerie underbelly.
And it's funny how a kid might hate it and enjoy it, if those are the right words. But, you know, what a kid's can suffer a story and still be thrilled or captivated, right?
Sure. A story or an incident.
Or an incident.
Not so long ago, I went into an elevator in a hotel, and there was a mother there and a child, and the elevator started to go down, and then it stopped between floors, and the lights went off. The mother was very frightened and was making noises. And I said to the child, well, if we die in this elevator, who do you think will have the more impressive funeral? Do you think people will really come out for you, or do you think people will come out for me? And we began to argue cheerfully about that and think about what kind of music we wanted played at our funerals. And I was insisting there would be far more people weeping and moaning. I mean, you know, this child didn't know me or anything. But we were having a grand old time, though also worried that it might happen, of course.
Sure. Your new book is Goldfish Ghost.
It is.
I understand your son was the inspiration behind it. True?
My son's dead goldfish.
Yeah.
More specifically.
And you're using goldfish there in the plural.
Yes. There were many of them. There are many dead goldfish in our own lives. But we were actually quite successful as young people with two goldfish that we had for years and years and years. We never cleaned their bowl.
No.
That was
probably
the
secret.
Yeah. Their names were Gene Hackman and Michael Caine. And they lived till a ripe old age, as I hope Gene Hackman and Michael Caine.
Yeah, for a long time, the goldfish appeared to have the longevity of both those Hollywood stars, but they died. The goldfish, I mean.
The goldfish shared a bowl. I don't remember. Did Hackman and Caine share a film?
No, and that was the thing.
Oh.
Is that we couldn't think of a film that they were in together, so we put them together because we thought that would be the most brilliant film of all.
Yeah. This was before the days of the internet. I feel now there's someone in the audience saying, of course they were in a film together and can't wait to call in and correct us. But this is being taped, so we've already learned about our error and we're sorry for it.
But our son's favorite part of having goldfish were when they died and he was able to have a funeral.
That was the favorite part?
That was his favorite part.
What was so great about a fish funeral?
The coffins.
Yeah.
He loved the coffins.
Beautiful coffins.
Tell me about the coffins.
There were old jewelry boxes. You know, when you buy a necklace and you take it home in a little velvet lined thing.
Perfect. Snap shut.
Yeah. Mm. It snap shut. They're really tasteful.
Mm.
They're more tasteful than coffins for humans, I think.
Both felt lined in some cases.
Satisfying after an open coffin viewing. If just snap right shut. Oh, that would be great.
That's closure.
Yes. Look, excuse me. I have to make a change to my will.
What does your son and other children get out of a story about a goldfish ghost? Or do you care what they get out of it?
I think it's a story about feeling lonely and looking for companionship. It begins when the goldfish is dead, floating on the top of a bowl, and he's a ghost.
It doesn't begin with it dying. You're right. It begins with it already being dead.
Yes.
Right. Which is, he's born. He's not dead.
Right.
So he says he was born on the top of the water.
That's right.
Water.
Yeah. So he wanders in ghost form all over a small seaside town looking for companionship, but it's difficult for him to find. We won't give away the ending, even though the book is a picture book and so can be read in 10 minutes. But he looks all over for companionship, and I think that there's not a child in the world who does not know the feeling of looking everywhere around one's surroundings and not seeing something that looks welcoming, whether you're trying to find where to sit at lunch or in the schoolyard, or if you go to a birthday party, if you're forced to go bowling. Mm-hmm. I was driven by a bowling alley recently, and I thought of all of the birthday parties I had to go to when I was a child that involved bowling, and how I hated bowling and how I was no good at it, and I would occasionally fake an injury or an allergy or something to stop myself from bowling badly. Bowling can be lonely. I wish you hadn't brought it up, frankly. Now I have a great sadness.
I still don't like bowling.
It's no fun. That's
it's not fun to do.
No.
You're rolling the same thing.
I think it's very brave of us to speak out on the radio like this, and I'm sure you're going to hear from bowling enthusiasts everywhere who I'm sure are charming people.
Yep.
But no bowling's doubt. No fun.
Am I giving too much away if I say you did get tempted by the happy ending with the goldfish ghost?
It's a satisfying ending. I mean, they're still dead when you come down to it.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it depends what you mean by a happy ending.
Well, there's not a resurrection. That's true.
No, yeah.
But
right. That's another book.
Yeah.
There's another book I'm thinking of. Oh, I can't think of what it is. Where there's a big resurrection.
Uh-huh.
Can't think of it. But
it did well.
It's a sequel.
It did very, very well.
Yeah, but some people don't like it. So you never know with the book. No, but this is, I don't know if it's a happy ending. I like thinking a lot about what actually constitutes a happy ending as something that when I go to libraries or elementary schools to talk about a series of unfortunate events, I like to ask people what they think a happy ending would be. Because oftentimes someone will say, I wish for instance, The Bad Beginning ended with Count Olaf being dragged off to jail. And I said, well, that's not really a very happy ending for Count Olaf. No one wants to be dragged off to jail. And they said, well, he's a villain. He shouldn't have a happy ending. And I thought, well, and I said, well, but you wanted a happy ending. Why doesn't he get a happy ending? It leads to a conversation of philosophical abstraction that is the delight of a certain number of children.
Finally, we're a news program.
Mm.
Do you reflect on current events in your work?
Sure. Well, I mean, this book is about wandering a new landscape, wondering if the landscape will take you in. So, for instance, I currently live in the United States, which is a country that is currently governed by an administration that's very much concerned with people coming into it and whether or not we should be welcoming to them. So in a way, that's a conversation that happens. And I think that for me to make stories, it's important to be in a constant state of loneliness and bewilderment, which is certainly encouraged if you read the newspaper regularly, which I do. So I think being bewildered and making art go hand in hand. And so I'm grateful for news organizations for bringing me the bewildering state of the world, including KUOW. Won't you donate now? Every morning you listen and you can't believe the horrible things that are going on. Won't you give?
Give for loneliness and bewilderment.
That's right. Loneliness and bewilderment. Give now and we have a tote bag for you, I bet.
Do you recommend loneliness and bewilderment? Would you have us all be there with you?
Well, I mean, I think loneliness and bewilderment are melodramatic terms for, in fact, beautiful states of mind. So I like that they're melodramatic terms, but I think loneliness is a term for being alone, spending some time alone in the confines of your own head and feeling meditative about the world and feeling separate from it so that you may meditate on it as a separate entity rather than part of the swirl. And then bewilderment is, in fact, being part of the swirl, is understanding that you are surrounded by vastly different points of view and vastly different experiences and trying to find your way in that. So yes, I recommend loneliness and bewilderment, and I enjoy calling them by melodramatic terms for my own amusement.
That is Daniel Handler, creator of Lemony Snicket, author of the new kids book Goldfish Ghost, and the illustrator of the book, Handler's wife, Lisa Brown. And you may have heard them say that they named their goldfish Michael Caine and Gene Hackman because they thought those two stars had never been in a movie together. And Handler said he was sure somebody would correct them.
A bridge too far.
A bridge too far.
What is it about, one wonders? It's about someone saying, do we have to stop for lunch or can we get past the bridge? And someone said, nope. Michael Caine says, let's carry on. Let's keep driving. And Gene Hackman said, I can't. I am hungry and I need a bathroom. No, I'm making that up.
Too far.
That is not the actual plot of the 1977 movie, A Bridge Too Far. Daniel and Lisa did discover that Gene Hackman and Michael Caine had co-starred in that movie. It is about World War II, not about where to stop for a meal. This is KUOW's The Record.